WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. On this first day of the new month, the final month of the year, can you really believe that it's December 1st of this year? I that blows my mind. This year is flew by. 2016, close to coming to an end. But we plan on starting your month with a bang, I should say, because we've got a ton of topics, an array of topics. No guests today, and we're going to have our phone lines open the entire hour for you to weigh in, via our phone lines, social media, any way you want to, okay? On today's show, we will chat about the Detroit Pistons, who picked up a pretty impressive win against the Boston Celtics yesterday. Back-to-back dubs, back-to-back days for the red, white, and royal blue, and the starters completely balled out, okay? And we're going to pose an interesting question concerning Reggie Jackson, who has yet to play on the hardwood for the D, and his replacement, Ish Smith, has taken his game to another level. We're going to pose an interesting question concerning Jackson, who will be returning very soon for that squad. Don't miss that convo. We will also chat about the Big Ten Football Awards. And for the first time in a long time, Michigan State was shut out of a first-team selection. We'll ponder that note. Also, what is it going to take for the Detroit Lions to clinch the NFC North? Of course, the Lions, the Honolulu Blue, are getting ready for a Week 13 matchup against engineer Isaac Constance's Saints. Yeah, the Saints, baby. That should be a fun game. I think it's going to be a really, really fun game. The Lions will actually be on the road for that one in the NO. The Lions sitting at 7-4, the Saints at 5-6, one game below 500. So what is it going to take for the Lions to clinch that division? A division in which they actually sit at numero uno as of right now. And, of course, on the back end of the show, we'll have Throwback Thursday. We love each and every Thursday to hop into our current sports time machine and just take a look at what exactly happened on this particular Thursday in sports history. And I also want to ask the question, does Tiger Woods still have it? Now, Tiger is making his return to the links as we speak in his very own tournament, the Hero World Challenge. And it's a tourney that he hosts, and it's one that that Tiger feels pretty good about. I'm going to read a few of his quotes and comments concerning where his game is at as of right now. And I must say, folks, he is feeling pretty confident, all right? So can Tiger make a comeback? We've pondered that question before, and yet we pose it again. But hey, before all of that jazz, you know how we start the show. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, we start with the MSU women's basketball team, who fell to number 21 Syracuse 75-64 in the Big Ten ACC Challenge at the Carrier Dome last night. Now, senior Torrey Jankowska once again led the Spartans with 21 points. I don't believe that they played a game in which Torrey has not led the team in scoring. Torrey throws in 21, and freshman Nia Holly added 10 points in her first start of the year. MSU now 5-5 all time in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. Michigan State returns home to the Brez to take on Oakland tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Big Ten football's regular season came to an end this past weekend, and in this year's awards were handed out, at least for our offensive awards, yesterday. Now, as disappointing as MSU's season was, the Spartans did have a few standouts. None, however, good enough to impress coaches and media to receive first-team All-Big Ten recognition for the first time in 10 years and the first time in the Mark D'Antonio era. Now, wide receiver R.J. Shelton and defensive back Malik McDowell made the second team. Brian Allen, Josiah Price, Riley Bullock got third team. Darian Hicks, Monte Nicholson, and L.J. Scott received honorable mention. We'll dive into MSU football being shut out of first-team all-conference selections in just a second. Don't miss that chat. The Michigan Wolverines men's basketball team lost to Virginia Tech 73-70 last night in the Big Ten ACC Challenge. Michigan led by as many as 15 points in the first half and by 10 with 7 minutes left in the game, but couldn't close out the dub. Michigan senior Zach Irvin led all scorers with 23 points, and the Wolverines got a huge boost from Duncan Robinson off the bench, who added 15. Michigan now 5-2 on the year and will play this Saturday against Kennesaw State at Chrysler Center at 1 p.m. 1 p.m. tip for that one. Ann Arbor Pioneer senior running back slash linebacker Antoine Simmons has reopened his recruitment, according to his tweet last night. Now, rated a four-star prospect by Rivals.com, Simmons had long been verbally committed to Ohio State, but had decided to take a second look. Now, Simmons had scholarship offers from Georgia, LSU, Miami, Michigan, Michigan State, Notre Dame, Oregon, Tennessee, Texas A&M. That was before he picked the Buckeyes. That's a lot of scholarship offers right there. Everybody wants this young stud, okay? So we'll keep you updated in the coming days if Simmons indeed decides to commit back to OSU or another team. Eastern Michigan, now 5-3, defeated Detroit Mercy on the hardwood last night. The men's basketball team picked up an 87-61 win last night. The Eagles limited the Titans to 6 field goals in the second half. Now, Eastern ended the game shooting 49.2%, knocking on the door 50, and 33% from behind the arc. Now, redshirt senior Ray Lee totaled 17 points, 4 assists. Senior Willie Magnum added 21 points in 26 minutes, and 6'10" sophomore James Thompson had a double-double with 14 points and 13 rebounds. EMU's next game is December 11th at 2 p.m. against Siena Heights. It's got to be fun to be an Eagles fan right now. I mean, your football team, after going 1-11 the previous year, now heading to the Bahamas Popeyes Bowl, and a good start for the EMU men's basketball team. Hey, shout out to the Eagles, all right? Okay, my team Cleves, folks. Yeah, the alleged rape victim took the stand today. The woman testified that former Michigan State men's basketball star, Mateen Cleves, forced himself on her at a motel last year, twice pulling her back into the room after she tried to leave. Cleves is accused of sexually assaulting the woman, whom prosecutors have said he met in September of 2015 at a golf outing, had drinks after, and then took her to a Flint area motel. Now, he is facing one count of unlawful imprisonment, one count of assault with intent to commit sexual penetration, one count of second degree criminal sexual conduct, and two counts of third degree criminal sexual conduct. The hearing started last month and continues today in Flint's 67th District Court. Court is in recess until 1:30 right now, and you can follow it various ways. I know many people are streaming it via Twitter, and also even the Detroit Free Press has live coverage of what is taking place in the courtroom. All right, the Detroit Pistons topped the Boston Celtics 121-114 to even the season record, at 10-10. That's right, Detroit sits at 500 on the year. Four of the five starters for the Pistons scored at least 20 points. How crazy is that, right? With Ish Smith missing the mark by just 1 point. He added 8 rebounds, 8 assists to that 19. Andre Drummond racked up another double-double as he tallied 17 rebounds, 2 steals, and a block. The Pistons shot 55% from the field, 45% from three, and out-rebounded the Celtics 52-33. Guard Isaiah Thomas led the Celtics with 27 points, but was held scoreless in the fourth quarter. Impressive defensive performance from the Pistons. The Pistons will conclude the four-game road trip tomorrow when they travel to the ATL to take on Dwight Howard and the Hawks at Phillips Arena. Tip time set for 8 p.m. tomorrow. And the Detroit Red Wings, last but not least, will return to action tonight as they host the Florida Panthers at 7:30 p.m. The Wings are coming off a 3-1 win against the Dallas Stars on Tuesday and are currently tied for fourth place in the Atlantic Division so far this season. The Wings are winless in two tries against the Panthers. Peter Mrazek will be starting in net tonight as Jimmy Howard is still nursing an injured groin. The Wings got good news on forward Thomas Jurco, who made his season debut on Tuesday night and will look to get more ice time in his second game back. Forward Darren Helm and defenseman Brendan Smith are still out for an extended period of time. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's start the show. Is how we start the show. So glad that all of you out there are tuned in right now. It's going to be a fun show, a fun show with no guest. We're going to open up our phone lines. And with that being said, we had to push some guests this week. So tomorrow, we're actually going to have two guests on the show. We're going to have Chris Solari of the Detroit Free Press, who's going to sort of put in perspective the season that the Michigan State men's basketball team has had thus far. It's been an up and down, topsy-turvy year. The toughest November in program history. And, you know, the comments that Tom Izzo had in the Bahamas after the loss to Baylor, making the statement that, you know what, maybe the schedule was a bit too tough for us. And he didn't regret who Michigan State has played this year. Again, they played teams like Arizona, Kentucky, Duke. I mean, these are top-tier teams. He doesn't regret who they've played, but the amount of preparation time in between, you know, lack of practice time, lack of time to watch film. So Chris Solari is going to join us on tomorrow's show to break down how he feels about this team moving forward. Again, as we are not that far away from Big Ten Conference play. And also, we are going to invite, as promised, Jeremy Miller, who is the head coach of the Pawamo Westphalia High School football team that just won a state championship over Thanksgiving break. The first state championship in school history for that team. How cool is that? I mean, that's got to be a crazy, crazy moment. So with that being said, a jam-packed show on Friday, a jam-packed show on today's show as well, but just without any guests, all right? So we encourage you all to be a part of the discussion. We'll have plenty of it on today's show. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. I mentioned at the top of the hour a few questions that we will be posing throughout this show. After our first break, I'm going to pose the question to you all whether or not you believe the Lions are going to indeed clinch the NFC North. Are you buying or selling this team right now? Because right now, putting my finger on the pulse of the Honolulu Blue fan base, many of you out there are buying the dream, so to speak. And I want to know, what are realistic expectations for this team? I mean, do you think this is a team that can make it to the Super Bowl? Or would you just be happy with the Lions making a playoff run where they win maybe one or two games? What do you think? And ideally for me, I think the Lions, at the end of the day, if they get a chance to host a playoff game, civilly that very first playoff game, I think they can get past the first round at least. So are you buying or selling the Detroit Lions? And I just got this update actually from Zach Swiezicki, one of our current sports PAs. Tiger Woods is indeed making his 20th return to the game of golf. I mean, you know, it seems like there's a pattern here, right? Where Tiger, he gets injured, he goes out and has surgery. Then he comes back, and there's this huge media storm that takes place, right? I mean, it happens all the time, but he's making like it's his 25th return. This time at his very own golf tournament. That's right, the Hero World Challenge an unofficial PGA Tour event hosted by Tiger, played in the we've been mentioning on this show, Isaac, the Bahamas a lot, haven't we? We
sure
talked
have.
About the with of course, you know, EMU going to a bowl game at you know, the Popeyes Bahamas Bowl, and then we had Michigan State playing in Nassau, of course, in the Battle for Atlantis tourney, and now Tiger is playing out there. I need to make a trip to the Bahamas. I'm missing out, dude.
Yeah, it's calling to you, clearly. That's, you know, God's destiny that's awaiting you over there.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, though, but yeah, that's where this is being held. And you know what's interesting about this tourney, though, Isaac, for Tiger, is that, one, first off, it's his own tourney. You know what I mean? So he should know the terrain pretty well, right? Number two, and I was mentioning this to our PAs before the show, it's an 18-man field, right? And not one of these golfers except one is ranked lower than like 36th. And you know who that one golfer is?
I'm going to guess Tiger.
Yeah. You think? Tiger right now is actually ranked. Make sure I'm reading this right. I may need my, you know, I'm blind, dude. I may need my glasses to read this. 898th in the world. That's crazy. Yeah, you're cracking up on it. Isn't that nuts to think that Tiger Eldrick Woods is ranked 898th in the world?
It's deserved. He might be a little bit overranked, to be honest.
I don't know who else is sitting. I don't even know. What's
hey, 835th is pretty good. Let me tell you, he is one hell of a golfer.
Well, I tell you what, man. When it comes to mere mortals like us, we're not even on that ranking chart anyway. So, hey, he's doing something good, I guess, in that regard. But he's a professional golfer. He's supposed to be ranked, right? But
he's got
a
few years on us, too. We'll catch up eventually.
Yeah. I never thought that Tiger would be ranked knocking on the door of 900th in the world. You know, this is a dude who was ranked in like the number one golfer, like pretty much my entire high school career. You know I'm a big Tiger Woods fan.
Oh, yeah.
Next to Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods is my favorite athlete of all time. But to see just how things have dipped off has been a bit unsettling for me. But, you know, Tiger's coming back. And going back to the point I was trying to make, I believe, Zach, you said that he's 5 under through how many? Through 5. He's 5 under through 5 right now at the Hero World Challenge, which is, hey, that's not bad. I don't know where that sits in comparison to the other. Can we open up Zach's mic? I want him to give us a quick update. Where is he at in comparison to the rest of the field?
So he just finished up to 6 hole. He's 2 under through 6.
He's 2 under?
2 under through 6.
Hold on, so he was just 5
he was
under?
1 under through 5.
Oh, my goodness. So he must have just had a horrible hole then, right?
No, he was 1 under through 5.
Oh, 1 under. So I'm thinking 5 under through 5. Okay, I'm going to get my numbers right here. So he's not having a bad day. So who is on the leaderboard right now?
He jumped up and he's tied for 4th now.
He is tied for 4th. It's not bad.
It's not. But if he was able to win this, I'd be able to give a little credence to maybe the argument that Tiger's coming back. But we'll see if he can maintain it. Like you said, he knows the terrain a little bit better too, so that's a huge advantage.
The good thing there is that there is no cut here because, I mean, no matter how he goes out there and mucks it up the first 2 days, today and tomorrow, if he does, he still gets to play in the weekend just to get him back in that groove. And it's an unofficial PGA Tour event just to see Tiger Woods. Golf is better when this guy, whether you like him or not, the game is better when he's playing because people want to watch.
And you are absolutely right about that. I know you love Tiger. I'm very lukewarm on him at best. The thing is, Tiger Woods, he had his own video game series named after him. The thing is, the Rory McIlroy PGA Tour, whatever it is now, that doesn't necessarily have the same ring. Tiger Woods, everything about the persona, the name, the playing style in the mid-2000s, he captivated America with his golfing style, and you can bet that golf, as good as the competition is right now,
right,
golf misses him.
Oh, certainly. From a financial standpoint, from a rating standpoint, I mean, I can go on and on and on. I mean, from an influence standpoint, I mean, watching Tiger, I've made this statement many, many times. I mean, watching Tiger made minorities want to get out there and play the game of golf that previously didn't even have that idea in the back of their minds, right? So, hey, and you know what also is crazy? I was looking up this. This talks about the sport of golf. I mean, Tiger, you know, he came in and he turned pro in 96, right? Players like Derek Jeter, Kobe Bryant, that's when they started their respective careers, and they've now retired. But in golf, I mean, you can play until your last day on earth. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's that kind of a sport. And we've seen guys who are up in age. I mean, Tiger's knocking on the door of 41 right now. I mean, I always bring up Jim Furyk, who was like, 46.
Yeah.
You know, and he's doing his thing still on the tour. Tiger still has a shot, We just have to see some significant improvements in comparison to what we've seen since 2013. So we'll see. So I want to ask you guys, do you think Tiger still has it? Can he make a legitimate comeback to the game? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. All right. The Detroit Pistons, folks. Man, oh, man, have they looked good this week on the hardwood. The Pistons right now sit at 10-10. They are now 3-8 when it comes to road games. And that was a big, that's really a big storyline that many have been harping on when evaluating the squad this year. They played lights out when the lights are turned on at the Palace of Auburn Hills. But away from those friendly confines, it has been a bit of a struggle. But what we saw last night, I mean, and what we saw the night prior to against the Charlotte Hornets, you have to be encouraged if you are a fan, okay? What's impressive, what I mentioned in our headliners, the Pistons had one starter, just one, who did not hit the big 2-0. Crazy, right? Four starters had 20 points or more. Ish Smith was that lone starter who didn't, but look at Ish Smith's stats. 19 points. This dude was close to Russell Westbrook numbers last night, Isaac. I mean, 19 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists. He was 2 rebounds and 2 assists short of a triple-double. Pretty impressive stuff. And I have a love connection when it comes to Tobias Harris and Marcus Morris. I love those two when they are on the court together. I really do. Tobias Harris, 21 points, 6 boards. Marcus Morris, 20 points. Those two alone combined for 41 points. And if you want to talk about the entire starting lineup, I mentioned Ish Smith was the only starter who didn't score 20, and he was 1 point away from doing that. The starting lineup accounted for 105 of the Pistons' 121 points. Insane in the membrane, to say the least. And Stan Van Gundy, head coach of the Detroit Pistons, he made a statement last night that I think was, that really puts in perspective how great that performance was from the Pistons last night. He said it was our best offensive game of the year. And you can't argue otherwise when looking at the numbers. The Pistons actually shot close to 60% on the night, 55.2% from the floor, dominated the glass, 52-33. And that's the thing with me. The Pistons win, Isaac, whenever they can win the rebounding battle. That has a direct correlation to that win and loss column. And it helps when you got big Andre Drummond down there and you have guys like Tobias Harris, guys like Marcus Morris, who are crashing the boards. And even the guards. I mean, I mentioned how Ish Smith had 8 rebounds last night, dude. I mean, that's a collective effort when it comes to crashing the glass. Andre Drummond controlled the paint, 20 points, 17 boards. You know, he got, I believe he was ejected. That was the Charlotte Hornets game.
That was the Charlotte
where he
game,
got
yep.
thrown out. And they were still able to win that game as well, which is a true testament to how deep this team can be. But this is the question I want to pose when it comes to the Pistons. I mean, we haven't seen Reggie Jackson play this entire year thus far. And when you see the Pistons rolling like they are, and I'm kind of foolish, and I'm kind of stirring the pot when asking this question because I don't believe in the other answer to this question, but are the Pistons right now, if you inserted Reggie Jackson into this lineup when they seem to be clicking the way they do you disrupt any sort of chemistry that the team currently has? My answer to that question is no. Reggie Jackson is such a dynamic player. He's such a dynamic scorer. And I think Reggie is starting to buy in, at least from what we saw last year. Again, we haven't seen him play this year, but what we saw last year, especially in the later part of that year, is that Reggie Jackson is finally willing to just pass the basketball. If he doesn't have it, he's willing to facilitate. And that's something that he had to learn when he came into the Stan Van Gundy system. In my opinion, having Ish Smith as a backup doing what he's done in these recent games, a backup to Reggie Jackson, that's heaven. That's heaven for this team right now.
Well, what you do if you're Stan Van Gundy is you send a message to Ish Smith and you say, thank you so much for holding this team down while our star player was out. This next week, when he comes back, because he's coming back soon, you're going to be fighting for minutes. Not for the starting spot, but for minutes. Because Ish Smith certainly has commanded enough respect that he can lead and direct this team. But he should certainly do it from the second lineup. Now, what you don't want to do, though, is throw Reggie Jackson into the fire when he's unprepared. He's not at total fitness right now. At least that's how it usually goes when players return from relatively long-standing injuries. That's how it was with Drew Holiday and the Pelicans. If you remember, on his return, the entire game switched around. That team is 5-2 since Drew Holiday returned. I think it's a similar situation with Reggie Jackson and Ish Smith. Yes, you don't necessarily want to displace Ish Smith, but at the same time, you made this guy one of your franchise players just a summer ago when you signed him to a long, long contract. You cannot forget that now, cause up any sort of controversy on a team that's got depth, chemistry, the whole team's clicking together. You mentioned all the players who had 20 points last night. The thing about this team is they don't succeed when one player has 35 points. No. They succeed when everybody comes together as one unit. It's what's so refreshing about Pistons basketball.
Yeah, and this isn't the Houston Rockets where James Harden has to like lead the team in scoring every single night, right? They have players that they have. I mean, you look at the starting lineup, they have players that can score, and they have a lot of them.
Exactly. So you put Ish Smith on the bench, and you see what he and John Luer can do.
Oh, I love Luer.
Because John Luer's had immediate, impactful substitutions throughout this season. He has really made an instant impact on this Detroit Pistons team with a facilitator like Ish Smith, who is probably a top 15 passing point guard in the NBA. John Luer, you can post him up, you can put him in the corner, you can let him go with back to basket or any other way, and Ish Smith will help him throughout. I think this Pistons team just gets better when Reggie Jackson returns.
And John Luer, 4 of 5 from the floor, 2 of 3 from three-point land again. This has been a bugaboo for the Pistons for in recent years as well, shooting the three-pointer. You cannot win if you do not shoot the three-ball effectively. And the Pistons have struggled with that time and time again. But you look at what they were able to do last night. They shot 45% from three-point land, almost 50. You hit one of those. I mean, they were 9 of 20. 9 of 20, one made three-pointer away from shooting 50%, Isaac. That is absolutely fantastic. And you know what? Another guy, you bring up John Luer. I love Luer a lot. I also like Beno Udrih, who I think has done a great job for this team. But you look at what surprised me, Beno Udrih. I mean, and again, granted, he didn't have to do a lot last night because Ish Smith was so good, but I was surprised to look at his stat line and to see 0 of 3 from the floor, played just 12 minutes, scored no points. That was just a product of the environment because Ish was so good that you didn't need him to come in and be lights out. I want to invite right now to the show Luke Robbins, who's a big NBA guy, one of our current sports PAs. And Luke, you know, and I was remiss because I usually watch every Pistons game. Didn't get a chance to watch that game live last night. I was here until 6, and I went to a program with my fraternity on campus last night, but I caught some of the highlights, and you pointed out actually that stat to me last night, Luke, that, I mean, they only had one starter that didn't knock on the door of 20 points and actually held Isaiah Thomas to no points in the fourth, which is nuts to me. I mean, defense, thy name was Pistons last night, right?
Yeah, you know, and honestly, the scariest part was that game was closer in the end than it probably should have been. But, you know, credit to the Pistons. They held on. You know, they almost blew it, but they just looked good. They were hitting every big shot. They were answering everything. You know, it was a great game for the Pistons. And I do want to pose this quick question for you guys. Do you think Ish Smith could become Sixth Man of the Year? Do you think he could win that award?
Oh, boy. I think it's so early to ponder that thought. I will say this, though. If the Pistons are a 4 or 5 seed, that's where I predicted this team will be when it's all said and done in the regular season. If they are a 4 or 5 seed, and if Ish's numbers, they're not going to, let's be real, they're not going to resemble, you know, an average of what we saw last night, right? But if he gives you a solid, you know, 10 and maybe 10 and 8, something like that. You know what I mean?
He's got a chance. He's got a good chance.
He's got a chance, but I'll have to see as the season goes on. It's so early, but Ish, I will say, he has the potential to be one of the best six men in the league. I will say that.
And the old contenders for sixth man of the league, many of them have been ruled out. We're in uncharted territory right now because Jason Terry is aged. Jamal Crawford not having the best season. Manu Ginobili out. Ryan Anderson now starting for the Houston Rockets. That throws him out of the competition. So, really, it's very up in the air. It would not surprise me if the 76ers can scrape by with a decent record. They've got so many good big men. Maybe see one of them in the Sixth Man of the Year competition.
That's true.
But, I think, really, it's up in the air. Ish Smith as good of a chance as anybody, but I still think the odds are against them.
All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, I'm going to just, and again, you guys know how I treat these topics, all right? I present the facts, and I let you think about what those facts are. We're going to dive into the Mateen Cleaves case. I'm going to just tell you what happened today when it comes to the victim, what she had to say. And we're also going to talk about the All-Big Ten awards that came out for football this week. And whether or not Jabril Peppers deserved that Defensive Player of the Year award. We'll invite Griffin Wasick and Zachary Swiezicki to the show. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, our phone lines are open if you want to be a part of the discussion here with 30 minutes left. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Now, before we move on and dive into the All-Big Ten Football Awards, which were announced this week, I want to give you guys an update of what is taking place in the courtroom concerning former Michigan State men's basketball star Mateen Cleaves. Now, the woman who is the alleged victim of this sexual assault case took the stand today and testified for the first time. And I will warn you, some of this is a bit graphic, and I'm just going to kind of throw out the facts here. And this is how I roll here when it comes to cases like this. And, you know, we've had many topics here on the show, Isaac, when it comes to court cases and athletes who have been involved with sexual assault. I like to postpone my thoughts until a ruling does happen. When the facts are out there, and when a judge or a jury says, you know what, you got to serve some time, or you know what, insufficient evidence. I like to wait to see how things play out. But this is a case that certainly hits home for a lot of people, because many in the community here in East Lansing know and love Mateen. You know, we've had Mateen on the show multiple times, dear friend in the industry, and it's been nothing but love whatsoever. And to see something like this happen, it does make you a bit uneasy, without a doubt. But anyway, just to go through a few moments of the transcript of what is taking place in the courtroom. Now, again, this is coming from Flint's 67th District Court, which actually just resumed after a brief recess. They resumed 3 minutes ago at 1:30, and the victim has taken the stand, and she testified exactly what took place in the and this is in the preliminary exam, I should say. Now, when she testified, she said that she came in contact with Cleaves at a golf course. If you remember, Cleaves was putting on a charity event at that golf course. And she then testified that after the event, wound down a decision that was made to go to a bar after. The woman testified that she sent a text message to Cleaves inviting him to the bar. She testified that Cleaves arrived at the bar about an hour after she got there. She says that she had drinks, including beer and lemon drop shots. And then she was told the next day that they went back to Warwick Hills Golf and Country Club. Which is weird. So I'm guessing maybe, you know, she was intoxicated at that point and didn't. Everything is kind of fuzzy after she started to drink. But the woman testified that others left the bar and she got into Cleaves' vehicle. She said her understanding was that they were going to go back to Warwick Golf Club, Golf and Country Club. And then during the drive, she asked Cleaves for a phone charger because hers had died. Cleaves said he did not have one. She then goes on to say that she wanted to call a friend because they were supposed to be meeting up at Warwick, and he was who she would be riding home with. And then she says they were on an expressway, and she remembers they then went to a gas station slash liquor store, where she then asked the attendant there if she could use a phone. And she then goes on to say, we were at Warwick and I was concerned, quote, I wanted to go home. She then says Cleaves allegedly told her it was time to go. She said she got back in the car with Cleaves and then ended up at a motel. She then told Cleaves she had a boyfriend and she wanted to go home. She testifies that Cleaves started to kiss her. Then the woman testifies that she also talked to Cleaves about his wife and that she kissed Cleaves back and remembers being on the bed. And then she remembers Cleaves being on top of her. She said that she had pushed him off, ran out of the room. She says, quote, he came out of the room and brought me back into the room. She remembers being back on the bed. The woman testifies that as far as she knew, no one knew where she was. She says, quote, we were on the bed and he started to touch me in her private areas. And the woman testifies that he penetrated her and pushed him off of her and ran out. And then it goes on to say that the woman testified that she ran out of the room for a second time. Cleaves came out again. She testified that she saw another woman and mouthed to that woman, help me. She said that she did not want to go back in the room with Cleaves. He pulled her back into the room. And the woman said no. And the woman testifies the next thing that she remembers is being in a room with the woman that she had seen in the other room. The woman says that she was in a panic state, saying, quote, I wanted to go home. I wanted to be out of the situation. And the prosecutors said no further questions. So when it comes down to it, Mateen Cleaves, again, who was accused of sexually assaulting the woman, he is facing one count of unlawful imprisonment, one count of assault with intent to commit sexual penetration, one count of second-degree criminal sexual assault, and two counts of third-degree criminal sexual assault. Heavy stuff to try and move on from that, right, Isaac?
Yeah, it sure is.
Gosh, man. So, again, we will reserve thoughts. That's how I roll here on Current Sports. We will reserve thoughts to win. This whole thing is said and done. It's going to take a long time, though, because this is just a preliminary exam to see if this thing is going to go to a trial. So there are, and again, two sides to every story. Mateen, I'm sure, is, I don't know if Mateen has presented his side of things. I'm not sure if he's, I don't think Mateen has taken a stand yet. Don't quote me on that,
though. Don't think so either, yeah. But, I know the details of the case, but like you said, for these types of things, it's really horrific because the details are so shocking. They're so mortifying. But at the same time, you can't feed too much into them until you know what the actual decision is. Now, of course, it's possible that the decision comes back and there's just not enough evidence and you still don't know what actually happened on that fateful night. So really, we do have to reserve our judgment. You can't cast any aspersions at this point, but all you can do is sin, pray that it's not true.
I really hope it's not. Phone lines are open, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR_sports. All right, let's shift gears right now and talk about the Michigan State football team as that squad pertains to the Big Ten Awards, which were announced this week. We had the defensive awards, which were announced on Tuesday, and on Wednesday, the offensive awards were announced. And get this, for the first time in Mark D'Antonio's 10 seasons, Michigan State did not have a first-team All-Big Ten selection. Four Spartans received second- and third-team offensive honors, nine players honored total. On both sides of the ball, that was MSU's fewest since 2007, which was Coach D's season debut. Right now, I want to invite to the show, in addition to Isaac Constance and Luke Robbins, we have Griffin Wasik and Zachary Swiezicki. First off, I want to pose this to both Zach and Griffin. How surprising was this news for you two, considering the fact that MSU did not have the type of year that many would have expected this team would have coming off an appearance in the college football playoff? Are you surprised that Michigan State does not have one player that was named Big Ten Conference All First Team? We'll start with Zach.
I mean, we talked about this before. The team as a whole just had a disappointing year. There were a few guys that had standouts, R.J. Shelton, L.J. Scott, but you look at the guys they were competing against, Curtis Samuel, Saquon Barkley, running backs, wide receivers. It's tough to see them really beating them out for first team with the years they had. So I'm not really surprised, especially with the year that the whole team had.
Griffin?
I completely agree. I mean, L.J. Scott and R.J. Shelton were bright spots on offense, but looking around the league at those positions, they're not going to beat anyone out. Maybe on the defensive side with Malik, but then you kind of factor in the injury problems he had. So, I mean, altogether, maybe Malik McDowell should have been first team, but him finishing second with the injuries and just the – I mean, he did have a down year because of the lack of pressure on that defensive front. So, I mean, statistically, not so much.
What kind of a message do you think this sends to the team? And do you think this kind of motivates them? We'll start with Luke.
I think it should. You know, this is a team that had high aspirations. They wanted, you know, their goal was to repeat and go back to the college playoffs. I think maybe the fact that nobody made the first team will probably light a fire and kind of give them just a little bit of extra motivation for next year.
Now, this is something that I brought up before the show, and I was prepared to go toe-to-toe with Griffin on this. And then I started doing my research, and I'm big on research and big on backing up my points. And I said, you know what? My argument will kind of fall flat on its face. But there are many that are a bit confused when it comes to Jabril Peppers, who was actually – he took home a trifecta of awards this week, of individual awards this week. And that was one that included – now, just to kind of go through them here, he was named Defensive Player of the Year. He was also named Linebacker of the Year, as well as Return Specialist of the Year. And there's one particular award. When it comes to Linebacker and Return Specialist, you can make a more solid case than Defensive Player of the Year, because that is the award that many people are scratching their head and saying, the best defensive player in the whole conference? Let's look at the numbers. And the numbers don't really back up the argument. Griffin, what is your, because you don't have a hot take, but you have a warm take when it comes to this, right?
All right, first, I want to start off saying Jabril Peppers is an outstanding football player on both sides of the ball. Offense, defense, you can line him up wherever you want. Special teams, even returning punts. I'll give Peppers that. But now, when you look at the Defensive Player of the Year, unbelievable. So now, I pulled some stats for you here, Al. So he has 72 regular season tackles, 16 for losses, 4 sacks, 1 interception, and 1 forced fumble. Now that altogether is not very impressive. So I dug even deeper looking into Big Ten play. He only had 45 total tackles in Big Ten play. And he won Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, that is a... that is a big... I really scratched my head when really diving into the numbers. And, you know, you talk about sacks, you know, Peppers finished 34th, you know, interceptions. That's one thing that really got me, interceptions.
And it was on the last game.
Against Ohio State. He just had one interception, and that came against OSU. You know, forced fumbles, recovered fumbles, passes defended. Not in the top 15 in any category.
I mean,
you know, and that's tough. You know, and I think more so it was his name, maybe. And, you know, we've heard just Jabril Peppers' name throughout the year and how he is the best. And there's no question, he is the best all-around player in the conference.
For sure.
But that's tough to look at the numbers and really compare them to other defensive specialists in the conference to put Peppers numero uno. Puzzling, right?
I mean, I don't even think he's the best defender on his team.
So who would you put above him?
I mean, you got
Jordan Lewis.
You got stud corners with Jordan Lewis. You got, I mean, I really don't know. I mean, I think he got it because of his name. I think all those aspects, like you said. I mean, he couldn't even get lucky and get one pass breakup. Like, at least, like, sticking his arm, like, maybe luck. But, like, he didn't even have one pass breakup.
Darian Hicks had 10 pass breakups.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
So you're going down. Yeah, and there's a multitude of players that you can bring up in this conversation, right, Zach?
It's tough because Peppers did play different positions. He won linebacker of the year as his main position. You could argue if he should have even won that. But it's tough because teams do game plan around him. I mean, they try to avoid Jabril Peppers because he's such a playmaker when he has the ball in his hands. Defensive Player of the Year, I don't think he should have won. When he has the ball in his hands, he's one of the best players in the Big Ten, if not the best.
Mm-hmm.
returner of the year, return specialist, I'm completely fine with. But defensive player of the year, I think, is definitely a stretch. I think it's name recognition for sure.
So I want to pose this to everybody here in the room. Isaac, who would you have given the defensive player of the year award in the Big Ten to?
And that's what I'm wondering is, although Jabril Peppers, and I think Zach makes a great point, he's one of those playmakers that you game plan around, just like Tyrann Mathieu back in the day or something. I think that's actually the most accurate comparison.
The Honey Badger.
Honey Badger, don't care. And, you know, you see that comparison thrown around. I like that. The thing is, does he deserve defensive player of the year? I will consider T.J. Watt as well for Wisconsin. He's an obvious name that stands out to me. He was all Big Ten first team, but I thought he could have garnered maybe a few more awards in there. And then when you're looking at the defensive backs, I'm with Griffin in that Jordan Lewis is Michigan's best defensive back. I think he'll go just about the highest corner in the draft. Him and Desmond King both will be in that consideration. But I would have considered T.J. Watt. I don't think it's a bad pick, though. I don't think there's anything that necessarily makes me scoff or roll my eyes when I see Jabril Peppers. And maybe it's just the name recognition. So maybe my vote would have been for T.J. Watt. My second place vote would have been for Jabril Peppers.
Luke, who would you give him to?
I think I'd probably give it to T.J. Watt.
He was really good this year, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, you know, that's just another dominant guy. And if he's anything that his brother's like, you know, that's...
Oh, boy.
The NFL is going to be pretty scared with both of them out there.
So you would have gone what, Griffin?
I would have gone with Malik Hooker. I mean, he had so many interceptions. He had 6 on the year, 3 of those being pick sixes. He had amazing tackles. And, I mean, I just think you couldn't throw on him. That was like a no-fly zone back in the day with Michigan State secondary. And you just couldn't throw at Hooker.
Zach.
Yeah, Hooker or Watt, I would have been fine with. Jordan Lewis as well had a great year. Taco Charlton as well. You talk about the games, the big games that they stepped up in. In the Ohio State game, I think he had, I don't remember, probably 4 or 5 passes he just swatted down. So
Right.
I look at, you know, it depends. I think it's the name recognition again. If you actually watch the games, it's hard to say that he really had an effect on every single game.
I would have gone with Malik Hooker myself. Yeah. I like Malik Hooker. If you look at his numbers certainly back up. Mm-hmm. The Defensive Player of the Year award for sure. And, you know, just to throw something out there, you know, I'm big on tackles for loss as well because it shows how a defender is involved constantly throughout the game. I'm big on that. And, you know, you look at, you know, Peppers, he had, what, 16 tackles for loss? And, you know, which isn't bad, you know, but still behind guys like T-Gray Scales of Indiana, I'm seeing here, and Carroll Phillips at Illinois. And, of course, outside of Colorado, most of those didn't occur against the best teams on Michigan's schedule. And that's another thing I look at, you know, against Wisconsin, Penn State, you know, Ohio State, you know, Peppers against those teams didn't record a single tackle for loss.
Well,
against Penn State, Ohio State, and Wisconsin, Isaac.
The one thing I would say is you look at Malik McDowell's season, I'd argue that maybe he got a little bit graced with his all Big Ten second team. I didn't think he was necessarily that good. A lot of it
who,
is...
Malik McDowell?
Yeah, second team Big Ten. He had quiet
he did.
Season.
And, he did.
You know, he might have dropped himself from a top 10 draft pick to a second round draft pick. That's how quiet we're talking.
There were games, though.
There were games where he took over. But there were certainly games where Jabril Peppers did the same and more so than Malik McDowell. I think this all comes down to how defenses plan around you. Now, the one thing Malik had to deal with that Jabril Peppers did not was ineptness around him. Malik McDowell really didn't have anybody to help him out on that line. Jabril Peppers had one of the best secondaries, maybe the best secondary in the entire NCAA. So, you know, you've got your debate to be made there. But the thing is, when teams do game plan to avoid you, same thing with Jordan Lewis on Michigan, it's a very different dynamic than when you suddenly pop out of nowhere.
I agree. I definitely agree with that, Isaac. All right. Well, Tiger Woods update. What do we got, Zach? I'm seeing here 4 under.
He's 4 under. 4 under through 8. He got in a little trouble on 9, pushed his drive left, and he's trying to go up and down for par. But he's 4 under through 8 right now, tied for first.
Say that again. I don't hear that often with Tiger
Woods'
name.
He's tied for first.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. pretty impressed. Again, still early, so I'm not throwing a Tiger Woods party around here. But
no, but this is impressive. It is impressive. It's what, the top 36 golfers, he said?
Top 32? 36. Yeah. These are, I believe the field is 18.
Yeah.
18.
The field is 18, okay. but out of the 18, no one's ranked 36th or worst in the world except for Tiger Woods, who's knocking on the door of 900th. So
that's something. Good for him. Kudos.
It's not bad at all. Not a bad start. I'm also seeing breaking news here. Patriots Rob Gronkowski to have back surgery on Friday in L.A. on a herniated disc. No timetable for return. And speaking of the NFL, we're going to chat about the Lions. What's it going to take for the Detroit Lions to clinch the NFC North? Big matchup that kind of, you know, speaks directly to that path for the Lions tonight. My Cowboys taking on the Minnesota Vikings. I'm pretty sure fans of the Honolulu Blue are rooting for the star to knock off the Vikings, who are, of course, in the NFC North. So we'll chat about that. We'll also take a trip down memory lane with Throwback Thursday. We'll be right back. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Less than 10 minutes left here on our airwaves. It's Thursday, December 1st. And, you know, I want to give a huge, huge shout out to my dog. Literally. Because it's my dog's birthday today, Isaac.
Oh, how
cool
birthday is
that? Her name is Chibale. I gave her
trying to remember. Yep.
Yep. Chibale is her, and people are like, Chibale? Who names a dog? What does that even mean? Chibale? This sounds like Chipotle. My when I crossed into my fraternity, my line name that they gave me was Chibale. In Egyptian, that means loyalty.
Huh. That's
so
good.
Yeah, it's got like three different meanings. I looked up after I crossed, and yeah. So she turns one, and you can actually buy doggy cakes at Petland. And I may be making that purchase later
That's
on.
Great.
So I love my dog,
happy
man.
Birthday, Chibale.
Yeah, and happy birthday, Chibale. Roof, roof. All right. it is December 1st, Thursday. I can't believe it's a new month already, the final month of the year. And you guys know, each and every Thursday, we love to hop into our current sports time machine and take a look at exactly what happened on this particular date in sports. We dub it Throwback Thursday.
But the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long. Eisenman
back over his stick. Into the slot for Brown. Shoots. Yes. And there it goes. You never know when to expect it. Darren McCarty said before.
All right, folks. We got a few events here. Nothing too big. Actually, we're gonna dial the clock. I don't think we've ever dialed it back this far. 1653. That may be a record, Isaac. I mean, we for sure weren't even thought of back then.
No.
All right. Oh my goodness. I think dinosaurs might have still been walking to Earth back in 1653. But anyway, an athlete from Croydon is reportedly have run 20 miles. From St. Albans to London in less than 90 minutes.
What?
How crazy is that, right? I kid you not. This is on onthisday.com. I saw this. I'm like, I got to throw this in there.
Yeah.
Run 20 miles from St. Albans to London in less than 90 minutes. That's impressive.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. I don't know how they recorded that back in 1653, but that's pretty impressive. 1923, we actually have two events from the CFL, the Canadian Football League, 1923 and 1928. The CFL Grey Cup, Queens U beats Regina 54-0 at Toronto. And in 1928, the CFL Grey Cup, Ham Tigers, love that name, beats Regina. Hey, Regina just had a bad outing on both of these Thursdays, 30-0 at Hamilton this time. So I really hope
is, I don't even know if Regina still exists, but I really hope they've turned that tradition around.
Yeah, I think it's a province or something. It's amazing. I was in Toronto this weekend, and I was just saying over the break, it's funny how much people like football in Canada. You weren't expecting it because it's different rules. The field goals are at the goal line. All of that. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
But at the same time, people go crazy for it. It would be like Americans falling in love with arena football.
Yeah, that is very, very true. That's very true. And let's move on to 1930. We got the NHL drops 20-minute slashing about the penalty. So that used to be a penalty back in the NHL. They dropped it, changed it. 1936, the second Heisman Trophy award was given away to Larry Kelly of Yale. How cool is that? Yale in the running for the Heisman back then. 1941, the last day of first-class cricket in Australia for 4 years. So some odd sports today, Isaac. There's no NFL, no NBA going. Which is nuts to me, right?
This had me cracking up, I have to say. The 20 minutes for slashing about the head. Yep. That's great.
That's when they say, I really dig deep for these, man. they abolished that one. So there we go. A quick update on Tiger Woods. 3 under through 9, now tied for 5th. So this just is going to happen in the first round. It's going to happen because, you know, one hole later, you see what happens. You know, birdies, bogeys happen. We'll see how Tiger finishes at 18. So 3 minutes left here. My, oh, my time flies. I want to just briefly hit on the Detroit Lions and what's it going to take for them to clinch the NFC North. I've been getting this question a lot. I actually saw in my email box that a few of our listeners wanted to actually chat about that, and they were kind of wondering what the numbers look like for the Lions as the season goes along. Now, as I stated at the top of the hour, the Detroit Lions will play the New Orleans Saints. The Lions sit at 7-4 atop the NFC North. The Saints at 5-6. This will be a 1 p.m. game at the NO on Sunday. And right now, looking at the line, the Saints are actually favored by 6 right now, Isaac. Is that surprising, first off, to you?
Yeah, it's very surprising, actually, with the way the Saints they've lost close games, but they've lost a few games. The Lions are on a hot streak. I thought the Lions would be favored, but albeit by just a few points.
Very true, and this is my opinion on it. The Lions have to finish 3-2 down the stretch if they want to clinch the NFC North, all right? That's would in turn give them a record of 10-6, which should be more than enough to win the division. The Vikings sit at 6-5. The Vikes would have to go unbeaten down the stretch to get the Lions, to get above the Lions, I should say. And remember, a tie does Minnesota no good in this scenario because the Lions have won both head-to-head matchups. Now, a 4-1 finish is possible, but a 5-0 finish is hard to really imagine for that team. Now, Minnesota still has Dallas tonight. Then they go on and play Green Bay, and then they go on and play Indianapolis. Watch out for Green Bay, though, because I think Green Bay, no matter how you feel about the topsy-turvy year that they've had, we know that Aaron Rodgers hasn't been the Aaron Rodgers of old. There's been multiple problems with that team. They seem to be getting back on some sort of track. I don't even know if it's the right track just yet. I have to see more of Green Bay to see if they're really, truly going to get things going and possibly can compete for that top spot. The Lions, though, it's theirs to lose right now, Isaac, and I think we can all agree on that.
Here's the thing. They don't need to beat the Saints. They don't need to beat a few teams left on the schedule. What they need to do is beat the division rivals. If they can do that, they've got it in the bag. They've put themselves in a great position, and anybody would envy it.
So true. And the Packers, very briefly here, they beat the Eagles, of course, on Monday night to improve to 5-6. And they have games remaining against Seattle, Houston, and, of course, Detroit. All right, folks, that wraps up today's edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic Thursday afternoon, and be easy, people.